This is Broadway to Brazil, the remarkable story of Corinthian Casuals, the English non-league club who took football to the world.
The list of international teams that the Corinthian Casuals have visited is long, weird, and wonderful. But perhaps one of the most unusual ties in the club's history features them as hosts rather than visitors. In 1991, a squad of the Soviet Union's greatest former players came to Tolworth. And as if this wasn't weird enough, their home country was all but being dissolved at that precise moment. We've delved deep into this remarkable fixture. This is The Russians Are Coming.
Just could not get the ball off them. Every single pass was defeat. I mean, the goalkeeper was half volleying balls 60 yards across the pitch, straight defeat. No sort of bouncing in between. It was just incredible.
They had a lot to drink and the bar was full of smoke and they stole all the ashtrays.
Two teams playing against each other who have this background, it's really about sport. It's not even about the game itself, it's about sport, right? And really being good sportsmen.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the second series of Broadway to Brazil. I'm Dominic Bliss, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Yarick Zabba.
Hello, mate.
And today, I believe you've got something very Cold War John le Carré for us.
Yeah, it's an unusual story, this one, and one that turns the tables a little bit, if you like, because rather than it being about the Corinthians as a touring side, this is about the club being a host to another touring party, a group of mysterious Russian visitors at the climax of the Cold War, a one-off friendly in Tolworth in 1991, and one that, as we discover through this episode, kind of gets to the root of what it really means to be an amateur.
I remember how this quest started, actually. It was part of our group chat, the Broadway to Brazil group chat. Stuart Tree, who's the club photographer, program editor, and press officer, all rolled into one.
He's on our next episode, in fact.
Yeah, well, he posted a picture of a program, and I seem to remember that you just went off on one.
Yeah, for me, the really interesting detail about this program was what was on the cover, the dates that were on the cover. And I think he was just sharing this as a point of sort of geeky club interest, but the history geek within me, rather than the football geek specifically, sort of zoned in on the date, December 1991, and it really intrigued me to see this date alongside the words Soviet Union, because December 1991 happened to be exactly when the Soviet Union was dissolving as a state, when it was completely collapsing before the eyes of the world.
Yeah, I remember the end of the Soviet Union is one of the first things I remember seeing on the news as a little kid.
The news from ITN.
The red flag came down over the Kremlin tonight as President Gorbachev resigned and brought to an end 7 decades of communist rule in the Soviet Union. Right to the last, Mr. Gorbachev said he was unhappy
so
with the breakup of the
idea that there was a touring team of footballers over here playing Corinthian Casuals in a football match while back home their country was kind of collapsing seems quite dramatic.
It's bizarre, right? And you know the Soviet guys as well with the real deal in terms of, you know, their credentials. You've got Olympics medalists, you've got members of the Soviet Union 66 World Cup side, which reached the semi-finals in England. You've got 1972 European Championship runners up, Cup Winners Cup finalists, and an endless amount of domestic titles as well. You know, proper players with a star man, a guy called Igor Chislenko, who is a veteran of 2 World Cups. And 2 Olympics. And as we're going to hear a little bit later, a very difficult man to man mark, because we're going to be hearing from Steve Bangs, who was on the pitch that day for the Corinthian Casuals. And we're going to hear from Gary Brigden, who was also a player at the club at the time, members of the club who helped to organise the tour. And also we're going to be hearing from an expert in sport as Cold War diplomacy in the Soviet Union, who's really going to place all of this into the wider context for us.
I imagine there's quite a contrast between not only the background of the players in these two sides, but also the clubs themselves or the teams themselves and their identities.
Right, yeah, exactly. You're talking about the Corinthians, product of Victorian public school aristocracy, and the Soviet Union, the flag bearers of the global communist movement. It's a bit chalk and cheese, but as we'll discover, perhaps more in common than we first thought, Dom. And also, I'm going to round this all off with what I'm calling a Broadway to Brazil historical exclusive.
All right, stay tuned. So we've got Soviet Union veterans versus Corinthian casuals veterans, 12th of December 1991. Already sounds weird to me. A very strange fixture on initial appearance. Where did it come from?
Yeah, so it essentially came about through personal connections between those on the casuals committee and those who had the links to the Soviet clubs. You know, for those of our listeners who can remember back to episode 2, Billy's Heroes, we spoke about the sort of makeup of the casuals side around this period of time, 80s, early 90s, and it wasn't really anything like the old Eton-Oxbridge connections of the 1880s. However, within the club, there were still a few of those sort of connections. An example of this being committee member Brian Wakefield. Now, Brian, we heard from in the last episode talking about the Sheriff of London Shield. He's still very much involved with the club today. And he was once part of the combined Oxford and Cambridge University side, Pegasus. At Pegasus, he played with a chap called George Scanlon, and it was through George Scanlon that this Soviet tour emerged, as Brian explained.
George was an outstanding linguist. He got a first in Russian at Cambridge. Because of his love of football, he was chosen by the FA to be the football liaison officer for the Russian team in the 66 World Cup. When British side played behind the Iron Curtain, George had got such a good reputation that he had frequent visits behind the Iron Curtain with British side as an interpreter.
Yeah, so what you're seeing with this George Scanlon guy, it's an example of how football was becoming a lot more international. You had the European Cup coming in 1955, and this offered opportunities for multilinguists like George Scanlon, who was head of Russian studies at Liverpool Poly at the time. Also my father, in fact, who got a gig in 1960s Manchester translating for the Polish team Górnik Zabrze when they had a game against Man U. A bit of Zabrze family trivia for you there. But yeah, Scanlon, as a Russian speaker, developed all sorts of connections with the Soviet clubs. But the problem was that as the Soviet system was starting to collapse, all the money was being pulled from these sides reliant on state funding, and George Scanlon alerted Brian Wakefield to this issue, and that's how the tour came about.
Yeah, he approached me saying that he became aware of a club in the Soviet Union called the Veterans of Sport of the Soviet Union. Basically, this was a team of USSR veterans, top-class footballers, who wanted to continue to promote themselves. Previously, it was a state that subsidised football in Russia, and that's why the Russians were regarded as amateurs. So they weren't professionals as such, but they were supported financially by the state. Well, the state stopped all that.
Yeah, so as Brian is alluding to there, this was essentially a fundraiser for the Soviet sides.
Right, so this is a club that now has to find a way to fund itself because the Soviet Union, the state, are no longer providing the finances for teams like this.
Yeah, exactly. And there's actually an article in the tour programme that speaks about this. It talks about how lots of people in Soviet sport were losing their jobs, how clubs like Dynamo Tbilisi had pulled out the Soviet system entirely. And it concludes by explaining how the Corinthians, the English hosts, are covering the accommodation and food for the tour, quote, which gives the Soviet club a chance to travel without having to find an impossible amount of foreign currency.
Well, this was like a return trip as well, wasn't it? Because the casuals had been to Moscow earlier that year. And I remember talking to Brian Wakefield about this, and and David Harrison. They were both there, and they said that, you know, at that time they saw some crushing poverty, and they almost felt, well, they did feel kind of self-conscious about being treated like kings, as they put it, by their hosts. Yeah, it was a real eye-opener for them, and it was a sort of a difficult trip for them to even relive when they were talking about it. So I think they were delighted to host the Russian side here after that.
That's an interesting sort of side story that maybe we'll explore again in the future. But for now, let's find out more about what happened when the Soviets came to Tolworth.
So tell us about this tour then. The Soviet veterans have visited England. Who are they playing?
Yeah, so the Corinthian casuals were in fact the third opponents for the Soviet vets on this tour. you know, as we've just been discussing, it was a fundraiser. So, you know, the Soviet team had to play some pretty illustrious opponents, which, of course, is why the first game was against the ex-Southampton and Celebrity 11.
Was that ex-celebrities or just ex-Southampton?
Yeah, allow me to clarify. That is ex-Southampton players and celebrities, football celebrities. In this case, the likes of Trevor Brooking, Alan Ball, Kevin Keegan. The game took place at Basingstoke FC, and the only testimony I've been able to garner from this game is from another Casuals committee member, David Harrison. He was involved in the game, and he simply called it bizarre.
Right, who else did they play?
Next up for the Soviets was a trip to Met Police Football Club in East Molesey, just down the road. I mean, it kind of feels like they're doing a bit of non-league ground hopping here. Here they played a team calling themselves the International Invitation 11, which featured a number of amateur internationals.
So was amateurism a bit of a theme with this tour?
Yeah, it seems so, and it makes sense, not just because Corinthian Casuals are the host team who helped to organise it and host the final match, but also because the Soviet Union athletes themselves were defined as amateur officially. The reason I kind of use the word officially is because, as we're going to hear now, the Soviet state may have been a little bit creative, let's say, with their definition of amateur. To help explain this, let's turn to the voice of Manuel Veth. Manuel is a football writer and an expert on sport in the dying days of the Soviet Union.
Communist athletes were supposed to be not professional, right? They were supposed to do this on an amateur level. Of course, we all know that the reality was very different. These athletes may not have been paid, but they got privileges that made them essentially professional athletes in anything but the name. They were not amateurs. They got every opportunity presented to them to be as professional of an athlete as possible without actually receiving actual cash to do the sport.
Some allusions to sort of communist-style shamateurism, if you like, there.
Yeah, quite. It crops up a lot, doesn't it, this sort of idea of shamateurism. We've talked about in the first series how it was a widespread practice before professionalism came in. It was a real hallmark of the amateur lower leagues that the likes of Martin Tyler played in later decades. And you know what? We've even heard it as an accusation thrown at the present-day club when we're doing well.
Yeah, I think anyone who's playing as an amateur is going to get that accusation made at them if they're competing with professionals or semi-professionals and looking comfortable. I think it's always going to be an easy accusation to throw around.
The curse of the amateur. The better you do as an amateur, the more you're going to be accused of not being an amateur.
Yeah, and let's be honest, it's quite well known that state amateurism in the Eastern Bloc during the Cold War was pretty much a form of shamateurism. I think there were a lot of Olympians and top footballers in those days were being paid, basically.
Yes, you're quite right. The accusations levelled against the Soviet state carry a bit more weight than those thrown at the present-day club here in Tolworth. But yeah, whether they were amateur or not, the Russians were coming. And coming up, we're going to hear from some of those who were around at the time. Hi, Yarrick here. We just wanted to remind you that the Broadway to Brazil book is available now. Published by Kingston University Press, the book tells the incredible story of Season 1, in which we follow the club during a dramatic promotion campaign. We were there for the action, got to know the players and management who were performing miracles, and also delved into the incredible history of the Corinthian Casuals. But the beauty of the book is that our journey is complemented by the wonderful pictures of Stuart Tree, the club's official photographer. It helps bring the podcast to life in a totally different way, and we think you're going to love it. It's available from most major online book retailers, with more details on our website, broadwaytobrazil.com.
Right, so this is the juicy bit, the game between Corinthian Casuals and the Soviet Vets.
Yes, which I will get into very shortly. But first of all, just to, you know, really nail down that weird international context in which this game was taking place, just to remind you of some of those dates. So the 8th of December 1991 was when they played that Southampton Celebrity 11 weird game in Basingstoke. On that exact date, some thousands of miles away in Belarus, President Boris Yeltsin of Russia, he sat down with the leaders of Ukraine and Belarus to sign the Belovezha Accords. And the Belovezha Accords essentially dissolved the Soviet Union as a nation state there on the spot.
All right, you've turned into Simon Sharma suddenly, historian extraordinaire.
Thank you very much. I'll take that one. Yeah, so yeah, it's just a weird image, isn't it? These guys on the grass, the Basingstoke grass, up against Keegan and Brooking, and at the same time, their country is being signed out of existence. And the Casuals game came four days after that, on the 12th.
That must have affected their mindset for the tour.
You'd certainly think so, right? But as Manuel Veth explained, perhaps it was a little easier in the pre-internet era to kind of avoid such distractions, especially if you had a football match to prepare for.
Oh, it would have been very chaotic, right? Because this is just around the time when the Soviet Union grinds to its end. I don't think we can really quite grasp what the time meant for people, you know, for Soviet citizens. And we have to remember they were Soviet citizens, right? First, before any kind of nationality that they may have held. It would have been a very turbulent time, but also a time that was probably very confusing for these people. You also have to remember this is not the time of social media, right? So they might not have been fully aware this very instance of what's going on. And then also, I imagine you've played football just like I have, right? And when you're on the field, you forget these things. When you do physical exercise, it is something that you can just use and shut down all the problems that you have in your life. And the reality is, I don't think people really quite grasp what change meant. People didn't know whether, when they go back to what is now the Russian Federation, whether that's going to be something that is going to affect them positively or negatively. People just didn't know, right?
Do we have any evidence of whether this kind of news affected them or whether football allowed them to forget their troubles?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we weren't able to get hold of any of the Soviet vets ourselves to hear it from the horse's mouth. But we did speak to Gary Brigden, who was the first team goalkeeper for Corinthian Casuals at the time of this match. Now, if you recall, this is a vets game, so Brigden was not involved in the match itself. But he did watch from the sidelines and he did have a chat with some of the Soviet guys at the bar afterwards. And as he relayed to me, the Soviets certainly seemed to be enjoying themselves at the very least.
The game they played down here, I remember it being a bitterly cold night, foggy, but the Soviet Union side, you just could not get the ball off them. Mm. Every single pass was defeat. I mean, the goalkeeper was half-volleying balls 60 yards across the pitch, straight to feet, with it not travelling more than a couple of foot off the air, but a couple of foot all the way across. No sort of bouncing in between. It was just incredible. The technique and, I would say, the movement, but obviously, for vets, movement wasn't that big a thing, but the speed of thought. So they were in a position to receive the ball way before anyone else. And it was just, it was phenomenal to watch. They didn't need to be fit because they never lost the ball. They however many people were around them, they would find a way to pass to their own player. And it would be a pass that it wasn't difficult for the player to control. It wasn't like a panicked hoof it to someone just to get rid of it. It was a controlled, measured ball into where their player was standing, despite the fact they had three men tight on them. It's just unbelievable.
So why don't we hear from one of the unfortunate souls on the pitch for the Corinthian Casuals vets that day, who had to try and deal with these international stars. One of the players that day was actually the Corinthian Casuals first team manager at the time, Steve Bangs.
My old PE teacher, of course.
I was just going to say, of course, also Dominic Bliss's former PE teacher at Sutton Grammar School. But yeah, when we invited Steve over to the clubhouse here at the Casuals, I pulled out the programme to kind of jog his memory, and he soon recalled to me the daunting task of man-marking the Soviet star man, Mr. Igor Chislenko.
I do. I remember it really well. Really, really remember it well, because I played in this particular match and it was a really freezing cold match. And we had a team which was made up of first team players, a few first team players, a few reserve team players, but quite a number of the vets team who were very, very good players. There was ex-England amateur internationals playing for us and stuff. So they were a good side. Well, I was one of the younger players at the time, and the word got out that their main man was a guy called Chislenko, who played in the 1966 World Cup, and he was supposed to be the best player. So I was given the job by the guy who was running the team of marking Chislenko. And it was probably just about freezing out there, 32, 33 degrees Fahrenheit. And as soon as he realised I was marking him man-to-man, he walked to the centre spot and stood still for 10 minutes and didn't move. And I was absolutely freezing, just didn't move. I've looked around to this guy who was running the team and said, look, this is ridiculous. I can't just stand here for the whole game. I'm going to die. He said, okay, well, let him go. And of course, as soon as I dropped off him, he literally ran the game. I mean, he was a magnificent player. Dominated the game in its entirety. So that was what I remember about him. He died shortly after when he was, I think, 2 or 3 years after that particular match. But he was a bit of a sort of Russian legend as far as international football was concerned.
Because the thing is, I mean, these weren't, you know, mediocre Soviet professionals. Oh, yeah. These were the elite.
They were good. They were really good on the ball. Their control, passing and stuff like that was outstanding. Can't even remember what the score was. I mean, it wasn't one way in terms of the score, but in terms technically, they were an outstanding team.
Yeah, unfortunately, we haven't really got to the bottom of what the score was on the day. Gary Brigden was also a little bit uncertain.
I got a feeling it was 2-0 to the Soviets, but that seems really low.
That seems very respectable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That's why I'm slightly concerned that might not be right.
But one thing Gary does remember is socialising with the Soviet lads afterwards in the clubhouse. Both he and Steve actually fondly recall hanging out with the guys. Despite their lack of common language, they seem to develop an affinity for one another. And that's despite the guests nicking some of the clubhouse merchandise as well.
They were in the bar for quite a while. Yeah, they seemed to be a decent bunch, to be fair. Very confident, as you'd expect from ex-pros. They had sort of like that air and manner about them that you think, okay, they're comfortable in what they've achieved in the game. But they weren't flashy or showy or disrespectful or anything like that. They were genuinely seemed to be decent people.
They weren't particularly fit. They were, I think, how best to say they were rounded. The thing I remember as well about the game is in the bar afterwards, they all smoked and we got some drinks in for them. So they had a lot to drink and the bar was full of smoke. And they stole all the ashtrays, which we couldn't really believe, but good luck to them, really. I suppose times were hard over there at the time.
Yeah, I don't think Martin, the present-day bar manager, would be having any of that. But yeah, I mean, as Steve sort of alludes to, behind the kind of funny side of it, I guess there is a sad tale there of how desperate the Soviet economy was if Corinthian Casuals clubhouse ashtrays are worth something. But anyway, what's a couple of missing ashtrays when you're extending the hands of friendship across the Iron Curtain?
Yeah, what I really liked about that was how both Gary and Steve had really kind of cheery memories of the characters enjoying themselves in the pub afterwards, even though they had no kind of common language. The old kind of cliche of football being that common language seems to have been true here. And that's almost the point of all of these Corinthian tours, isn't it? So I think it's really nice that they reflect on it and they remember the socialising as much as the game itself. Sometimes sport can actually soothe the problems that politics causes, and I think that's a really good case in point.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well put, Dom. Right, so coming up in the final part of the episode, did the British gentlemen amateurs of our Corinthians have more in common with the Soviet sports machine than we might have thought? And have we stumbled across a significant, previously unknown sporting milestone? So, Dom, it was you who spoke to Manuel Veth, our Soviet football expert. And when you did, you made some interesting discoveries yourself, right?
Yeah, at the end of the interview, the tape kept running while we continued the conversation. And in the end, both me and Manuel agreed that we could use some of that because we discovered these sort of strange parallels between the amateurism that Corinthians espoused and the amateurism of communist sport. And how strange it was that these kind of, you'd probably say that if you went back in time to when there were real fears about communism in the West, that the public school Oxbridge types who founded the Corinthians might well have a large element of people in there who'd be very anti-communism, very fearful of revolution. All right, there's been a few left-wing spies out of Cambridge over the years, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm.
And it would, to me, it was quite interesting to think that these guys wanted to oppose professionalism from the word go. Obviously, in communist countries, they wanted to oppose professionalism full stop. So they had that in common on the football pitch, even though they were coming from completely different sides of the argument.
You know, these players were incredibly talented and they had the best of educations in the Soviet system. I think this is something that we don't quite appreciate when you look at these athletes, that the training that they went through in the Soviet Union was was world class, especially in the 50s and 60s. And some of these players played in multiple sports, right? I mean, we had Yashin was also a very good hockey goalkeeper. Where does that come from, right? We don't have that today. Everyone is specialized. And I think we don't appreciate that enough, how good these athletes really were.
And here's where the irony hits. So the Corinthians were famous because they were sporting all-rounders. This is going back to the original Corinthians in the Victorian era. So they were the best football team in the world, but they were made up of privileged gentlemen. It was an exclusive club of guys who basically had been to private schools, Oxford and Cambridge University. So they were the opposite of communist in one way, but they had a very similar sporting pedigree to that communist era footballer in that they played test cricket for England. Some of them were tennis players at Wimbledon. Some of them competed at the Olympic Games as athletes. And I think that idea of the sporting all-rounder comes around possibly when the sport isn't professional.
I think you're quite right. And I really love the scene that you're setting here, because you had sporting all-rounders from both sides competing with each other. And, you know, it really is a sign of time, of professionalization, right? That the fact that now we have athletes that are just basically churned out in a production line, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-old soccer players that will do nothing else but play football. And that wasn't really thought of in the system in the 50s and the 60s. You were supposed to be a good athlete. And if you were a good athlete, you could do so all sorts of things. And I love this idea, the scene that you're setting of these two teams playing against each other who have this background where it's really about sport. It's not even about the game itself. It's about sport, right? And really being good sportsmen.
Yeah, I love this bit of tape. It's a good example of why you should always leave the tape rolling, in fact, isn't it, Dom?
Yeah, all sorts of things come up when you leave the tape rolling. And we ended up talking about sportsmanship, Corinthianism, communism, amateurism, and how they all tie in together in this kind of strange melting pot. And you had it all on the pitch in one game. So it was how everything came together was while we were trying to kind of wind the conversation down.
Yeah, I mean, you got two sides here, both ostensibly amateur, both in the tradition of the sporting all-rounder, as we've just heard, coming together for a fundraising friendly in political turmoil, despite complete contrast between the two systems. Is this the game that above all embodies the Corinthian spirit?
Yeah, I mean, we've covered quite a lot of games that you could say that was the case of, so I don't want to come down on it and say that, but when you put it like that, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe not above all others. to wrap up the episode, here's that historical exclusive that I've been promising you, and in order to do that, I'm just going to remind you of some of these key dates. Southampton and Celebs game, 8th of December 91, that's the same day the Soviet Union is signed out of existence. Casuals game, 12th of December 1991, the last game of the Soviets' tour of the UK. And I'm just going to throw one other date out there, 13th of November 1991. So that's a month before the game that we've been talking about today. Cyprus 0, USSR 3. That's the last time the USSR men's team played.
Right.
Here's the claim. So if that's the last Soviet Union football match for the senior men's, and this game against the Corinthian Casuals takes place a month later, pretty much after the country has essentially been signed out of existence. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is the last sporting occasion ever featuring a team under the Soviet Union banner.
Love that. Against Corinthian Casuals.
Against the Corinthian Casuals veterans at King George's Arena on a cold December Tolworth night. And don't just take my word for it. I also emailed Manuel, our Soviet football expert, asking if he could verify this claim. He wasn't quite as excited as I was, but his reply was, "I'm not aware of anything that scuppers that claim. That said, some sort of sporting event could have taken place, but best to say that it was likely the last event taking place under a Soviet banner."
I'll take that.
Take that all day long, mate. And you know what's going to happen now is the Broadway to Brazil social media feeds are now going to be inundated with people who have all sorts of examples of, I don't know, sports teams calling themselves the Soviet Union well into 1997 or summit.
This is how you find out if anyone listens to your podcast. You make a bold claim and see if anyone writes in.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the story of the Soviets coming to town.
Thanks, Sherry. That was brilliant. Really enjoyed that. I would say to listeners, if anyone has got a claim about a more recent Soviet Union game, genuinely do get in touch, because that's That is a little bit of history. Please join us for episode 7, which will be an in-depth look at the current crop of Casuals players we'll be hearing from, the men who pull on the pink and chocolate today.
Looking forward to it. See you next week, listeners.
Next time on Broadway to Brazil.
In that changing room, there's no outsiders, there's no one on the outside, everyone's together, and I think that's kind of shown in the last few years, the way we've kind of ground out results.
Some of the ultras would bring in dogs, like pit bulls, and you'd be warming up on the sideline and you have just like this flimsy gate in between you and this dog, just like pretty scary at times.
He was going in the shower and he just paused. He turned around and came up to me. He's naked, effing and blinding. And I was just like, what the hell is going on?
Broadway to Brazil is produced and presented by Yarick Zaba and Dominic Bliss, with editing by Yarick Zaba. Brent Davies is our audio engineer, and our title music is by John Forrest. Matt Alabuster did our artwork, and Chris Kelly manages the website. With additional thanks to Robin Hutchinson and the Community Brain and everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club. Broadway to Brazil is part of the Highway 61 network.
Follow Broadway to Brazil on Twitter at Broadway to Brazil with the number 2 in the middle. And remember, the Broadway to Brazil book is available now, telling the story of Series 1 with fabulous photos from Stuart Tree. You can buy the Broadway to Brazil book from any number of online retailers. Head to broadwaytobrazil.com for more info.